My name is Stephen Brooks. I'm an emergency doctor and researcher in the Faculty of Health Sciences at Queen's University. Out-of-hospital cardiac arrest affects about 35,000 people across Canada every year. The sooner treatment begins, the higher the probability of recovery. Neighbors Saving Neighbors is a pilot program to improve survival for people who experience sudden cardiac arrest in Frontenac County. Let us teach you how to do CPR, use an AED, and become a lifesaver. Consider becoming a Neighbors Saving Neighbors volunteer.
Apply today at frontenacparamedics.ca.
You're listening to Kingston's only campus community radio station, broadcasting 24/7, 365 on 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. Tune in for the best local programming.
Good morning. It is 11 a.m. on Friday, January 10th, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. In today's episode, we'll be covering the abrupt end of Writers' Fest announced at the end of last week and the not-so-smooth wind-down, a proposed sports stadium and possible addition of a CPL soccer team to the city, headlines directly from the city of Kingston, and more. After 16 years of providing literary programming, Kingston Writers' Fest has announced that they will be ceasing operations. The news was shared in a release from the board of directors last week, citing ongoing financial challenges as the reason for the festival folding. The board states that declining attendance, increased operational costs, and reduced revenue since the pandemic have created deficits that cannot be overcome, with reserves being depleted years ago to sustain the festival. While costs were cut in 2024 with a scaled-down event and more intimate setting at the screening room, the changes were not enough to save the festival. Ara McCulley, who has worked for the festival for the past 11 years and has been artistic director since 2020, was told at the end of November that the festival's run would be coming to an end and that staff and contractors would be laid off. McCulley sat down with CFRC to discuss some of the reasons behind the decision to end the festival. To start us off, I was wondering if you could just get into some of the background here and some of the factors that led to this decision that we all learned last week.
I mean, it's been certainly a challenging environment for arts organizations in general since COVID first hit. You know, there's been a lot of articles, a lot of conversation, there's been other festivals that have folded as well. And I mean, it's a combination of different issues that have sort of brought us here. Part of it is the age of the core demographic for lots of arts organizations, which tends to be a little older. And those are the individuals that are more susceptible to illness from things like COVID and the flu. And as a festival that takes place at the end of September, which is sort of the start of that season, I think it's led to hesitancy from people to go out that would have gone out before because they don't want to get sick. I think, too, people just got used to not going to events during COVID. And I think the kinds of things that people want to go to now that it's back are perhaps a lighter, like things like movie and music that is kind of easier to consume and doesn't take, you know, sometimes the emotional and mental bandwidth that, you know, reading a book for 20 hours might take. And, you know, we've seen cuts at all levels. A lot of government organizations sort of helped organizations during COVID, but as soon as that help stopped, most of them went to less than what they were giving organizations in 2019. So it's sort of, you know, we're still trying to regain audiences. Our audience was about 30% below what it was pre-COVID. And so when you combine that with having your funding cut by 5 to 10%, at all levels, and then losing some corporate sponsors and seeing that drop in ticket sales, it's just, it's a lot of issues to try and navigate at the same time as you're trying to put on a festival. And I think part of it too is just trying to figure out what people want. You know, we have one festival per year, and so experimenting can happen a little bit in the off season, but we don't know from year to year what the outcome is going to be. So, you know, our first year in person back, we were like, okay, well, we'll just plan as if we'll see a little bit less in attendance, but we'll just do the festival as we always have. And it took a couple of cycles to realize like that formula wasn't going to work anymore. So, you know, we did make some major changes here in 2024. But, you know, it takes a lot of time. And there is obviously a risk in keeping going when it could lead to you going further into debt. And that wasn't something that the board was comfortable doing for continuing on into 2025.
While the festival has been stretching to make ends meet for a number of years, McCulley spoke to the abruptness and finality of this announcement. While the statement from the board of directors stated the financial challenges make running the festival, quote, impossible, McCulley also expressed disappointment that more efforts were not made to save the festival. When you got the news at the end of November, I was wondering, was this kind of a big surprise for you, or were you kind of anticipating it with the struggles that you've been facing in the last few years?
The abruptness of it came as a bit of a surprise. I mean, I don't think it was a surprise to any of, like, there's one other staff member, but we have some contractors as well. I think, you know, we try to be really transparent with everyone we work with, so we all kind of knew the situation that we were in. I think the finality of it was a surprise. You know, Kingston has been incredibly supportive to the festival for the 16 years that it's been running. And to not give supporters one last chance to, you know, like if we had run a GoFundMe or something like that, one last chance to kind of just get us over this hurdle and into 2025 was disappointing for us. My colleague Jennifer and I had been doing a lot of work in developing a business plan to make the festival more sustainable, but you know, again, these things take time. And so yeah, I mean, it was sudden, but I mean, we all were realistic about the issues that the festival was facing.
In a social media post, McCulley shared that the wind down of the festival has not been smooth, with the abrupt ending, her and other staff not receiving severance pay, and missing paychecks for staff and contractors. Here's what McCulley had to say on these issues. The wind down has not been a smooth process from what I've gathered, including you not receiving your severance that you're owed and a lack of communication with staff members. I was wondering if you could speak to that a bit.
Yeah, I mean, not only severance, I mean, we were not given any notice when we were let go. So staff was not paid for the month of November. So we're owed that salary. Also, my colleague hadn't cashed her October check, so she's actually owed 2 months of salary. And then as someone who's been working with the festival for 11 years, I should have received severance pay. And that has not materialized either. And so it made for a really difficult December, certainly trying to navigate that with no income coming in. So, you know, and we're not the only ones that weren't getting paid. And that was one of the reasons that I made a post on my own Facebook about it, was just as the face of the organization, as the person that people know, I'm the person that's getting asked. And if I'm being quiet about bills that aren't getting paid, the assumption is that I'm ignoring people or that I'm willfully withholding money. And I just wanted to let people know that, like, staff and contractors are in the exact same boat as everybody else in this situation, unfortunately.
McCulley has contacted the province regarding the lack of severance pay. The Writers' Fest Board of Directors did not respond to requests for comment from CFRC. McCulley had the following parting words for Writers' Fest attendees and message for Kingstonians in the literary community. I was wondering, just reflecting on the past 11 years that you've been with the festival, if you had any parting words for those who've enjoyed the festival over many years and what perhaps the Kingston literary community can look forward to still.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that was the saddest for me was with the suddenness of the decision and the request that we not be public about the fact that we're closing is that I didn't get an opportunity to say anything to the public. I've been going to the festival since 2010. So I've been there, you know, attending for 15 years, working there for 11. Obviously, it's an organization that's really near and dear to my heart. I've made some incredible connections within the community, with other arts partners, with local authors, with artists, and just the amazing audiences that have come year after year. And so, I really just wanted to say what a pleasure and a privilege it's been to be part of this journey. Kingston is very special. It's got a really vibrant arts community. Authors loved coming to this festival because of the audiences that came out and their thoughtful questions and their engagement. That's something I think that's really special and that we should be really proud of. Speaking to some of my colleagues, some of the contractors and staff that have worked with the festival, nobody wants this to be goodbye. So I think there are hopes that, we can do at least one-off author events here in Kingston. This is leaving a huge vacuum for a really important, there is no other literary festival that happens here. And so for authors, that's a huge vacuum that, as amazing as something like Novel Idea is, they can only program so many book launches in a year, right? And so to be able to offer a platform in some way, I think, is something that we really hope to do, and to continue to celebrate the amazing authors that are here in the community and in Canada as well.
Kingston's Memorial Centre could see big changes in the near future, as a proposal to build a new multi-use sports stadium on the city-owned property will be coming before council at their next meeting. Located at 303 York Street since 1951, the Memorial Center is currently a multi-purpose arena. Some of the key features of the property include a war memorial, an ice pad, an aquatic center, agricultural barns, and an off-leash dog park. The space is also currently home to the Queen's Varsity Hockey Team and host to many community events, including the annual Kingston Fall Fair, the Memorial Center Farmers Market, and concerts. While suggestions to use space on the property have been made in the past, including the idea of a high school in 2015, none have been deemed the right fit for the community. However, the city was recently approached by Victory Grounds Ventures to establish a multi-sports stadium, which the report to council states would bring a Canadian Premier League soccer team and two semi-professional soccer teams to Kingston. The stadium would also be available for community use. Victory Grounds Ventures would lease the land from the city and the development would be privately funded. Paul Barbeau, managing partner with Victory Grounds Ventures, sat down with CFRC on Thursday to discuss the proposal. I was wondering if you could speak a bit about Victory Grounds Ventures, their involvement in the proposal, and where this idea kind of began.
So this idea began in Ottawa, and I'm a season ticket holder for Atletico, and I wasn't pleased with the stadium. I felt it didn't fit the environment that the team needs to play in, and that's playing in a football stadium rather than a footy stadium. And in that process, I started looking around at other options, and Kingston came as a great location to bring this solution to. And I reached out to the league and said, would you be interested in expanding to Kingston? And they said, if all the criteria matches, one of which is a FIFA grade stadium, we'll be happy to look at Kingston. So that's where it sort of started and where we ended in Kingston. Victory Grounds Ventures is a group of individuals that are very passionate about footy and looking to bring a great product to the city.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned there, this would allow us to have a team in the Canadian Premier League, more space for our existing community groups. I was wondering if you could speak to those opportunities as well as other opportunities that could open up for Kingston.
So one of the things that's important to note is that about 80-85% of the usage of the turf will be for community use. There's only a very small percentage that be used for the professional team. Most of it will be used by community youth teams, adult rec leagues, and all that sort of side of it. But it obviously can look at now hosting international games. You used to have rugby, international rugby games here. We can host those because we're having a rugby underlay. So, you know, it opens up a whole different sort of group of events that you can now have at this facility. facility. Also, it means that things like the fair will have additional spaces to do things at. So the concert show can be on a stage in the stadium. So there's, it can add to the existing services and features that are there right now.
And you mentioned you'll be meeting with councillors this morning to discuss the proposal before it's considered at council next week. Who are you sitting down with and what are you expecting from this conversation today?
I'm sitting down with every councillor, and so I will have time with every single one except one who I've already had a meeting with the other day. So I expect to get their input from the community and what's important to them and their constituents, so I can look at addressing them and help help move this project forward.
Mayor Brian Patterson also posted a video on social media covering the proposal and asking the community for feedback through an Instagram poll and the comment section. Out of 807 responses to the poll so far, 87% said that they would be willing to support the idea. However, those not in support expressed their concerns in the comments, including the impact of increased traffic and noise on the surrounding community and the required removal of the barns on the property for the project. Council will be deciding between three options at their next meeting on January 14th. Moving forward with the proposal from Victory Grounds Ventures, proposing an alternate city-owned property for the project, or turning down the proposal. We have a few messages directly from the City of Kingston. New 2025 municipal fees and charges are now in effect. Every year, as part of the budget process, Financial Services works with all city departments to review fees and charges, ensuring they align with their policies and strategic goals. In December, Council passed a new bylaw to set the fees for 2025, and revenues from these fees will be included in the Mayor's 2025 operating budget. Most services with fees are also partly paid for by taxes. The 2001 Municipal Act allows them to charge fees for services which are a big part of the city's revenue, about 15% of the total budget. It's important to review and adjust these fees every year to keep a fair balance between what users pay and what taxes cover. If they don't adjust the fees, property taxes would have to be raised to cover the costs of these services. While some fees stayed the same or were adjusted for inflation, such as parent and taught swimming lessons, pet licenses, and on-street parking fees, others like monthly FitPass memberships, marriage solemnization, and garbage bag tags are increasing. These increases help maintain service levels, reflect what the market rate for a service is, and are set in accordance with council-approved strategies. The city states that any increase to fees can add pressure to your household budget, and they apologize for not sharing this information sooner. All fees and charges are now updated on their website. You can search for the service you access to see the current pricing. To see all 2025 fees and charges as approved by Council on December 17th, you can visit the City of Kingston website for the full Council agenda. The City also released a full statement specifically about the raise in bag tag fees. The statement goes as follows. Solid waste, trash, junk, rubbish, waste, no matter what you call it, household garbage is expensive. In addition to the environmental costs of producing waste, there are financial costs too. When you throw out that bag of garbage, a combination of tax dollars and bag tag fees pay for labor, fuel costs, equipment maintenance, disposal fees, and more. Households all have one free bag every week with a fee applicable, the bag tag program, to any additional garbage bags. In the case of garbage bag tags, this year's $2 per bag tag increase reflects the rising costs the city faced in its solid waste division. The first time this fee has changed in more than 20 years. The cost to deliver garbage collection service has increased by $700,000 from 2021, when it cost $4.8 million, to the budgeted amount for 2025, $5.5 million. The actual landfill costs and fuel surcharges have also increased from $93 per metric ton in 2021 to $104 in 2024 per metric ton. The fee increase of the additional garbage bag tags to $4 will help to cover some of the costs, but still leaving a property tax subsidy of $4.4 million to support your first free garbage bag. The city states, quote, "We know the increase surprised many people, and we apologize for not sharing this information sooner. If you have any bag tags you bought before 2025, you can continue to use a single tag on additional bags. Remember, all households can still put out one bag for free, plus your compost bin and unlimited residential recycling. Find ways to reduce your waste and positively affect climate change at cityofkingston.ca/waste. In a final message from the city this evening, they recently released a winter services response plan.
In a final message from the city this evening, they recently sent out a memo reminding folks of the Winter Services Response Plan. The 2024-25 Winter Services Response Plan, effective December 1st, 2024 to March 31st, 2025, outlines the services available within the City of Kingston to support people experiencing homelessness during the winter season. The Winter Services Response Plan includes locations offering emergency beds and overnight services, including summaries of services offered and hours of operation, weekday and weekend daytime drop-in services, warming centers, and street outreach services and prevention diversion services. The Winter Services Response Plan is designated to adapt and evolve based on demand and availability of appropriate locations. It is important to note that some sites are scheduled to add capacity over the winter season and in response to changes to services at other sites. The plan is available to read on the City of Kingston website. Next up, we will be revisiting a story from December regarding labor relations at Queen's University. As labor disruptions remain a possibility for this year, and Queen's unions and the university ramp up for pivotal discussions this month, the following story contains the latest updates on the situation headed into January 2025. Before we get into more local news, I'm going to turn to our weather and traffic report for today featuring CFRC's Jesse Bell.
This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. Friday, January 10th, high of minus 4. It'll be cloudy. We'll see a drop of about 7 degrees to minus 11 overnight. Saturday, January 11th, daytime high of minus 5 with a 40% chance of snow, dropping down to minus 9 overnight. And Sunday, January 12th, we're going to see a daytime high of minus 3 and it will be cloudy. Monday, January 13th, we'll see a high of minus 5, dropping down to minus 10 overnight. And Tuesday, January 14th, a high of minus 8 with an overnight low of minus 11. This is Jesse Bell with the City of Kingston Traffic Report for the week of Monday, January 6th, 2025. Aberdeen Street, Johnson to Earl. Expect delays and closures along Aberdeen Street for a contractor to complete road and sewer reconstruction. Collins Bay Road, Prince Charles slash Edwin to Princess. Expect delays while a contractor completes phase 2 of the Princess and Collins Bay active transportation improvements. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club. Expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Please be aware of lane shifts, traffic speed limits, and share the lane signage. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford. Expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, cycling, and pedestrian improvements. For project details, please visit Get Involved Kingston. Motorists are advised to seek alternative routes. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence. Expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Sir John A. MacDonald Boulevard at Elmwood. Expect delays while a contractor upgrades the intersection at Sir John A. MacDonald Boulevard and Elmwood Street, including replacement of street lighting, new traffic lights, replacement of asphalt on roadways, and a new multi-use pathway south of the intersection towards Bath Road.
Thank you, Jesse. Now back to more local news. For the second half of this program, we will be flashing back to some previous stories which will soon have updates. Starting off this spring, we'll kick off Tiffany Morgan's Silver Jubilee Year, 25 years of drag in Kingston. In celebration, she is providing a community grant and support to other local drag artists. Today is the final day to submit proposals for Limestone to Limelight, and we may be expecting to hear news of a selected project in the coming weeks. To get you ready for the exciting announcement, please enjoy this rebroadcast of the story introducing the project from November. Kingston's very own drag superstar Tiffany Morgan is headed into her Silver Jubilee year, marking 25 years of entertaining as a drag artist. To mark the occasion, she seeks to offer a platform for other Kingston-based performers to highlight the rich history and exciting future of the local drag scene. Limestone to Limelight is a program offering support and funding assistance to projects with a focus on Kingston's drag history and future, showcasing the evolution of drag in Kingston. This could include art installations, workshops, performances, and beyond. Proposals will be submitted by early in the new year, and the chosen projects will coincide with Tiffany's official Silver Jubilee celebrations in March 2025 to 2026. I sat down with Tiffany Morgan to chat about her experience of the local drag scene over the past 25 years, and the invitation she's presented to local performers with Limestone to Limelight. So this project, Limestone to Limelight, is a celebration of your Silver Jubilee year. But what made you land on this idea of supporting another project?
Well, you know, hello, sweeties. It's me, Miss Tiffany Morgan, coming to you live from CFRC. The idea came out of just being purely out of ideas. So my Silver Jubilee year is coming up, March 2025 to March 2026. And I was like, I really want to do a whole bunch of things in that year, but I have no idea what I want to do. I'm like, I have no energy to do anything. And thanks to some projects that I've been doing, I've been able to save up a little bit of money. And now I'm like, you know what? I could just ask other people to do stuff to celebrate my Silver Jubilee here and just give them some money so to do that. So that's kind of the genesis of the whole idea. But also it was really becoming an interest of mine because I was able to recently work with Branded to Film and actually do some acting recently with Branded to Film with Doom Boogie. And working with all those other artists, like the visual artists, the sound artists, and even all the other actors who are also musicians and stuff, it was quite the synergy of arts. And I was like, you know what? I really want to be able to bring this to the rest of the drag community as well. And I was like, how can I do that? And I'm kind of hoping that this would make some interesting little collaborations and marriages out there.
Interesting. So you're kind of hoping that the applicant would be able to connect with those people throughout their year of doing these events and projects and stuff?
Yeah. I can totally see, like a drag artist working with maybe a videographer or and doing like a documentary or something. You know, it's been a very long time since Miss Tiffany Extreme Close-Up came out, but even just highlighting drag since then, but it could be any kind of project, really. It could be visuals, audio, whatever it may be, or an event, or who knows. I'm up for, you know, seeing what kind of applications I get.
The theme is celebrating Kingston's drag history and future. I'm sure you're excited to see different interpretations of this, but what can that mean? What kind of projects are you looking for?
Well, I'm trying not to, trying not to kind of lead people into any kind of project or anything like that. I really want artists to kind of come up with their own ideas and bring forward those ideas. And even if it's an idea that I'm like, well, I may not grant you the fund, but I may be able to connect you to others to kind of make that synergy within the arts world. I was able to connect someone to CFRC. I'm like, you know, CFRC is a really great radio station who does podcasting and stuff. You may want to talk to them. So even just having that kind of collaboration, that kind of meet and greet. The Silver Jubilee year, it's surprising to see myself years later. It's a little rare in the drag community for some drag artists to continue doing it past a certain age. And I'm at that certain age. But yeah, 25 years, I think it's a milestone to celebrate. And I want to celebrate with the rest of the drag community here in Kingston. So yeah. And drag has changed over 25 years here in town.
This project is about celebrating Kingston's drag history and future. So let's start with the history. How would you describe the scene leading up to and when you first started? What were you walking into in the early 2000s?
Yeah. So I first moved to Kingston in August of 99, Queen student. Still Queen student, I guess. never finished. Anyway, in August of 99, I moved here and I met the drag scene at the time at our local gay bar. It was very LGBT kind of queer people, and it was just in the local gay bar sort of thing, but it was a very vibrant community. The community had started in the I believe in the late 80s, early 90s, as a way to fundraise for HIV AIDS, and they still had that very passionate, like drag had to be part of doing good for the community, right? And so I came into that scene. I was just enamored by it, just in love with it. And that's when I started doing drag in March of 2000. first time doing drag, it was it was quite fun going out to the local bar, Club 477. It was called the gay bar in town at the time, and soon after there was a little drag show, and it was a very vibrant scene at that time. And then there was a little moment, a little hiccup in time, when I was the only performing drag artist in town.
Wow.
No,
that's crazy to think about.
It's really hard. Yeah, you had like a half dozen drag artists, and then suddenly they all retire, mm-hmm. or move away, and then then the gay bar closes down, and it's like, where is there's no queer space, because it was very much a queer space was supporting drag at that time. Mm-hmm. And then we started moving into where I was being invited to do drag at a lot of the arts kind of places. So the, for instance, the Modern Fuel Art Gallery hosted me before they moved. Anyway, when it was downtown. Also the Artel. I don't know if anyone remembers the Artel. They had some kind of burlesque, Broadway, a cabaret. And they were like, we need a drag queen. Okay, I'll be there. And then suddenly we started having this wellspring years later, and that wellspring hasn't dried up at all. Like, there are so many drag artists, but now it's even more. It's not just, not just queer people, and it's not just drag queens. It's drag kings and drag clowns and drag artists, and it's just such a wellspring of art. And yeah, I want to make sure that legacy that we have here in Kingston continues on.
Yeah, I was actually wondering if you could speak to that a bit more, kind of carving out spaces for drag in Kingston. I mean, we don't have a queer bar anymore. I remember, a buzz of excitement when there was potential that there would be one downtown. I was wondering if you could, just speak to carving out new spaces for drag.
Yeah. Well, let me say, definitely in the early 2000s, having a gay bar would have been like really great asset to, making sure that you had drag. But I think drag has slowly become a little transcending like the gay bar. It's definitely falling outside of the gay bar. I think even when you look at the other communities around us here too, they're having them at venues that you're like, well, is it a gay space? Is it a straight space? Well, we're not really necessarily thinking about that because people are just really liking drag. I always have to say that I have to tip my hat to Miss RuPaul out there and getting it on Netflix. Because Drag Race suddenly getting onto Netflix during the pandemic, and everyone's just sitting at home watching Netflix, and they're like, oh, look at this drag. I think it broke the stereotype in people's minds at that time, because I remember the stereotype of people like, well, I would love to go see your drag show. They would be talking to me, I'd love to be go to see your drag show, but it's at the gay bar, and I don't think I'm welcome at the gay bar. And I'm like, well, you're definitely welcome at the gay bar. Like, hey, if you want to go see a drag show, you're definitely welcome. But now, we're doing drag outside of the gay bars, and it's okay that you don't have to be gay to go see a drag show. People of all ages and all types love to go see a drag show. I think also I do have to give a little shout out to our grad club, the local grad club here. They've been very supportive over the many years of drag, and even just as an alternative kind of space as well, having queer dances and stuff like that there too. But the grad club has been there forever and a day. So I do want to give a little shout out to them and donate if you can.
Yeah, I mean, you really spoke to how the scene's changed over the last 25 years that you've been involved in it. What do you think is on the horizon?
Well, I'm hoping that we get out and kind of connect with other art forms out there. So drag has always been kind of like the drag show, right? A live performance show that you would go to. Maybe it's a bingo show. maybe it's like a brunch or something like that. But it's a very kind of live, a live audience type show. And I would love to see drag kind of branching out into different art forms as well. So for instance, like I said, I was asked to do a movie with Brandon to film as Miss Tiffany Morgan. So I was like, look at my drag. My drag is in a movie now. I'm like, suddenly my drag is from a stage and now it's into a movie platform. And I would love to see that for other drag artists in town, not necessarily movies, but even just getting into other art forms out there, whatever they may be, and just kind of finding, making a space for themselves out there. So yeah, we're not just we're taking over the world, and that's a good thing.
I feel like I see that on a big scale. I think of drag queens in LA or Drag Race alum doing music and talk shows and all other kinds of things. But Kingston specifically has such a vibrant art scene. I feel like the opportunity for cross collaboration is right there for the taking.
Can you imagine a drag a band doing an album or something like that in Kingston, like, you know?
I absolutely could. And if folks are listening and just can't get enough of you, where can they find you leading up to the holidays and beyond?
Well, leading up to the holidays, so Saturday, November 30th, we're having Holiday Spice, a holiday fundraising drag show. And this ties right into the fundraising aspect of, you know, drag. Oh, you have to give back to the community when you're doing drag. So we're raising funds for Rainbow Railroad, which is a charity which helps save LGBTQ lives around the world. Sometimes all it takes is getting a plane ticket to get out of a dangerous situation into a safer space. So Rainbow Railroad really does that. And I try to fundraise for them every year at the Holiday Spice show. It's going to be at the Grag Club Saturday, the November the 30th. And it's going to be a crazy show. If you haven't seen a drag show, I don't know if this would be for the first timers, because it's going to be quite the show. And then afterwards, you'll find me in March. In March, I'll be definitely doing a little Jubilee kind of performance show, but also doing a little meet and greet. So more information, if you want to find more information about both the Limestone of the Limelight kind of call for proposals or for any of my events in town, you can go to my website, tiffany.com. That's TYFFANIE.com. Or if you are like, I can't remember that, go to dragshow.ca, dragshow.ca.
Once again, that was Tiffany Morgan on her upcoming 25th drag anniversary and her new offering, Limestone to Limelight, which will coincide with celebrations next spring. Once again, that was a flashback to a story from November introducing Tiffany's Limestone to Limelight project. Once again, proposals for this opportunity are due today. Next up, our final story for this episode. As we approach the end of January, Queen's workers' unions are preparing to re-engage in discussions with the university regarding wages. The following story aired just before the holidays and sets the scene for later this month. Recent strike votes from Queen's University workers signal possible labor disruptions in the new year. A release from QP earlier this week confirmed that across three Kingston groups, 96% of members voted in favor of strike action. This includes trades, custodial and food service workers, educational and laboratory technical staff, and library technicians. According to the release, most of these Queen's workers have seen their wages fall below inflation by 11 to 14% in recent years, and many have had to take on second or third jobs to make ends meet. For those in trades, hourly wages are $10 to $15 lower than at other Kingston employers. QP254 President Marie Edwards, representing technicians, spoke to the current state of negotiations in an interview with CFRC. What have you been experiencing so far, and what are you hearing from your fellow Queens workers? Where is the university falling short here?
The biggest problem among our members right now is wages. The constraint of 1% wage increase over the last 3 years has impacted the members greatly, especially considering how inflation has driven the prices of everything up. So if you look at the buying power, we've gone down in the last number of years by roughly 10% of buying power. So members are having, they're having a hard time putting money away to save. Some are having difficulty making ends meet with rent. We have a fairly broad range of salary. Some of them are having difficulty with food. They're experiencing food insecurity.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you could speak to the circumstances and the state of negotiations that's brought us here, where Queens workers are ready to strike in the new year.
They're feeling that the university is not listening when it comes to compensation. There was a request to have a wage opener clause in the last collective agreement because, we knew that the wage constraint did come down from government. The university denied our request for this. And we're concerned that they're going to come into it looking for a similar increase that they've given us in the last number of years. So in the last 10 years, our wage increases have been an average of 1.25.
While it is anticipated that wage negotiations will be difficult, Edwards did report progress in non-wage related bargaining, which took place just prior to the interview. You did mention that you just came back from bargaining with non-wage related issues. How did that go?
That went very well. There's been good discussion on the language and the changes. Some of the changes were to align the collective agreement with language from labor laws, that kind of thing. Some of them were also to recognize, for instance, the recognition of a family member may mean different things to different groups.
When asked for comment by CFRC, the university simply responded stating they are engaged in separate talks with several unions, and they remain committed to reaching negotiated agreements that are capable of being ratified by the parties involved. While workers are ready to strike, Edwards has hope an agreement will be reached before it comes to that. The latest update from Queens, since it was released that QB workers are ready to strike, was simply that you're still in negotiations. Do you foresee any change in circumstances before the new year that would prevent a strike?
We're all working towards reaching an agreement to avoid a strike. But the workers want to be in a position where they can, if they're going to strike, we want to strike in a manner where it will have the most impact so that we can get it dealt with and finished as quickly as possible. Because really, everyone wants to be back at work.
And do we have any ideas on timeline?
We have not been offered any monetary proposals at this time. The university has not given us any idea when we might be expecting those. We do have a number of bargaining dates scheduled for January, towards the end of January, the 24th, 28th, and 31st. So I'm hoping that there will be some monetary proposals on the table at that time.
Once again, that was a rebroadcast covering possible strikes coming up this year. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for listening to CFRC's local news programming, brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. To listen on the go and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Coming up next for CFRC's afternoon lineup, at noon we have Democracy Now! Syndicated Daily Global News with Amy Goodman. At 1 p.m., join Corey and Madeline for Close Reads, featuring talented writers in the Queen's community each week. At 1:30 p.m., we have Melodies of Myth, and at 2 p.m., we have Whiplash, Anything and Everything with DJ LFN. Stay tuned for all these programs and so much more right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
What'll Little Eyewear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.
Tune in every Wednesday from 10 until 11 a.m. while I explore themes, atmospheres, or moods across genres and decades. Whether I'm scoring a scene or doing a genre deep dive, there'll be something for everyone.
I'll give you another tune to help your appetite.
The Mood with me.
On radio.
C-F-I-C.
The best radio station we've ever heard.
Every day you hear something new on CFRC. Can you keep up? Need a weekly recap? Catch up with What's Climbing Friday mornings at 10. The charts on CFRC.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a new single by the Sugar Pills called Sugar Pill. The latest track gives listeners a window into a night out in Kingston with the band. It speaks to making your own fun regardless of time or place. Sugar Pill has that quintessential feel-good factor, leaving you with an optimistic glow. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Sugar Pill buy the Sugar Pills on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Coasters. Isaiah's outside admiring our poster. Evan's waiting on a drink he ordered 20 minutes ago. An old guy just offered me a beer, but I know if I take it I'll have to stay here. And all of this has got me wondering if I should have gone home when Caleb did. But now it's
CFRC 101.9 FM every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 p.m. You'll hear Finding a Voice. My name is Bruce, host of that poetry-focused spoken word program. On it, you'll hear local readings and events, occasionally telephone interviews across Canada, and always a touch of music. Again, Finding a Voice, here every Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Check it out. Hope to catch you there.
Have you been dumped? Left all alone? Just want to find your soulmate? Look no further, because your new best friend is waiting for you at the Kingston Humane Society. The Kingston Humane Society is a nonprofit animal organization founded in 1884 that is supported solely by the community, receiving no government funding to assist in their mission of caring for injured, abused, and homeless animals, with the goal of creating families and homes for the animals. They are the only open shelter in the region, accepting every animal brought to them with compassion, respect, and humane assistance. If you want to donate to help these animals find their best friends, or if you're interested in finding the new love of your life, please visit KingstonHumaneSociety.ca. Everyone just needs a little love.
Hi, this is Harry from Adult DVD. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 in Kingston, Canada.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present Kingston-based folk trio The Kildares with their first single called The Escape, a song about rekindling hope by escaping the everyday with someone special. Featuring energetic mandolin and warm harmonies, the lyrics connect with anyone wishing to sneak away into the night. It's the first release off The Kildares' upcoming debut album, Faster Than Light, due this spring, 2025. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream the Kildares single The Escape now on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.